Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Tim, and as Simon said, I'm the oldest of the Burke grandchildren. And I've just been asked to come and share a little bit of the journey that I've been with God. And I guess just a few reflections on what does it look like to persevere when everything seems to be stacked against you and it all doesn't seem to make sense. How do you get through those times? So, I was brought up in a Christian family. I always went to all the youth group when I was a kid, Sunday every week. Went away to some conferences like Soul Survivor. I know a few of you have been to those kind of things. Like, all the way through my childhood, I'd always say that I was a Christian. And I'd talk about it at school. But actually, I'd never really set the discipline myself of praying, of reading the Bible and investing in that relationship with Jesus. I kind of just went along with it because it was part of the routine of our family life. And so when I went away to university, I did get stuck in with a church down in London very quickly. But actually, I didn't have any kind of foundation personally. I hadn't really developed those routines, those habits that keep me close to God. And so very quickly, I kind of got into this whole world of uni in London and swept up in all the different things that were going on. And very quickly found myself in a relationship with a girl who was an amazing girl, but she wasn't a Christian. And actually, over the course of about a year, I just found that relationship became one of those things. It became a weight. It became something that pulled me away from my relationship with God. And actually, even though I was going to church, and even though I was like in the team, in the worship team, actually, I found that it was something that just weighed on me, that kept me back. And eventually, I had a decision to make about what was the future going to look like. What path was it going to go down? And at that time, because I didn't have any real strength of faith, actually, I turned away from it. And for a long time, for 7 years, I basically didn't really go into church. It wasn't active at all. And it was only when I found that over the years, as they went by, I found that actually I slowly became less and less the man that I always thought that God had called me to. Because when I was a kid, I did have moments of being really enthusiastic and thinking, you know, I even wanted up at school, the show and tell thing at school once, and I had to talk about a sponsor child that I had. And I don't know why, but for some reason, as I stood up and spoke at the end of it, the words just came out and I said, and I feel God wants me to be a missionary in China. And it was like, so I'd have these moments of just being like really fired up, but it wasn't solid. And so when I went away to university, it fell away. But I found that over time, I became less and less the man that I thought God had called me to be. And I got very involved in the rugby club at uni, and that was a lot of fun. And but you know, the things that are going on that you're just like, it's not that good. It's not that good for you. And even after then, I worked in sales in London. I was working for a global IT company. There was a lot of travel, a lot of client entertainment, black tie dues, all these kinds of things. And I got really caught up in that. And I found that actually, over time, my hope, my identity became all of that, my career, my success. And actually, the cost of that came to the relationship I had, and it broke down. And I came out of this 7-year relationship just feeling really angry. I'd made bad decisions, and I was just thinking, I was like, what is my life coming to? What has happened? And I found that in that place, I was just really just devastated. And over the course of the next 2 months, I think I came back to Manchester for the weekend to visit my parents. And I went to church with them. Actually, I didn't go to their church. I went to my sister's church. Because I went to church to keep up the appearances that I was going to church. And it's easier than having a big argument over Sunday lunch. But I did go to their church, so I didn't want to explain it. I didn't want to talk about it. I wanted to be completely anonymous. So I went to my sister's church. And it was just one Sunday night. And it was just like a normal Sunday. And I just remember walking into this church building, and I was just sitting there. I could just feel the presence of God there. And it was just so tangible. He was just there. And it was like nothing I'd experienced in like so long. And I remember sitting in my chair and just thinking, oh my goodness, it's just God, it's the presence of God. And I was, honestly, inside I was squirming because I just felt so uncomfortable. I was like, I feel like I've gone so far from you that actually I've drifted away. And I kind of want to come back, but I don't. And I had this moment of just like, actually, I don't want anyone to tell me how to live my life. I'm sick of parents, I'm sick of all of these different things saying do this, do that, girlfriends, friends, and I was just like, actually, and I don't want, God, I don't want you to tell me how to live my life. And I was like, I wanted all these things that I'd never felt able to do. I was like, that's what I want to go and do. And that's what I did. And I'd just been promoted at work, and I was really, really, I'd done quite well at work. So I'd been promoted into a new sales team. I was 20 years younger than everybody else in my team. And there was a lot of pressure, a lot of expectation. And I basically said to myself, look, I'm going to focus on work. I'm going to do all, I'm just going to work really, really hard. I'm going to focus on that. And that's what made me happy. If I get that achievement, if I get that success, that's where it's all going to come. And I did. And I worked very, very hard. And I was working 18-hour days, working weekends. I was travelling a lot, going to overseas on business. But I found that actually I never found that thing that I was really looking for. And to kind of distract myself from all of that, and we go out a lot. We go out and, with the guys from work, we drink a lot. And then I was just lonely, so I was just kind of bouncing from one relationship to the other. And after a whole year of this, I just got to the place where I was like, what is going on? What has life become? And I remember I went to my sister's church again about a year later, and I noticed it was just like a normal Sunday in June, and I'd been up in Manchester for the weekend, and there were all these people. I felt like I noticed it for the first time, all these people worshipping God, singing these songs, and they were absolutely going for it. They were loving it. They had like hands in the air, they were like declaring the praises of the Lord, and I was like, these people are mental, what are they thinking? I was like, I'd so gone so far away from that. Because I did a physics degree at university, so I used that to justify a lot of why I didn't believe what I believe anymore. And I was like, no, wait, this is June. It's not Christmas. It's not Easter. It's not a baptism. It's not a christening. It's not a dedication. This is a normal Sunday. It could be any other Sunday of the year, but there's something different. These people have something that I don't have. And I just remember standing there and just thinking, all right. I was like, I've got nothing left. I'm at the end of myself. And I was just like, basically, I just stood there in meeting the cinema, so it's like the least traditional thing. And I just stood there in the cinema row, and I was just like, all right, God, if you're real, you need to make yourself real to me. Because I feel like you're somebody I don't even know. I don't know how to find you, even if I wanted to. But I think I want to. Now, as I said, I've done a physics degree, so kind of spiritual encounters and those sorts of things were not part of my worldview. But I had a vision. And as I was standing there, in this cinema chair, I had a vision, and it was of my parents' home in Manchester, and it was filled with light, it was filled with love, it was filled with the presence of God. But I was outside, kind of by myself, kind of hunched over, angry in the rain, and just like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, just like in my own cave of just self-pity and woe. And Jesus was standing on my front porch, and he had his hand out to me, and he was just saying, it was just like, Tim, just come home. What are you so afraid of? And I realised I was really terrified of God. And I realised I was actually scared of him. And I was just like, started crying. And I was like, my brothers were there. So I was like, go grip of yourself, mate. So I was sort of like, screwed it all in. And I was like, I'd been really affected. And I remember the song finished, we sat down. And the whole service went by, and it was just like in the whole own world. And then at the end of the service, there was another song. And as soon as I stood up, it was the same thing. It was, Jesus just had his hand out to me. He was just saying, just come home. What you're so afraid of. And I just felt in that moment, I could just feel all like the presence of God, like he was standing right in front of me, all of his love, all of his acceptance. And I was just like, and I felt terrified. I just felt so unworthy of this. And I just said, all right, I choose to trust you. And as soon as I said that, it was like all of his love, all of his acceptance, all of his forgiveness just poured into me. And it was actually overwhelming. I was so broken that I couldn't really cope there, and I wept and wept. And after about 20 minutes, it sort of passed, and everyone else had left, and my sister was just sitting with me. And I felt like I had this picture of a city that had been a really ugly city that had been completely destroyed by an earthquake. I felt like God was saying to me, look, all of this stuff you've tried to build for yourself, all these things you've done, we're just going to tear it all down, we're going to sweep it away, and we're going to start again. But you need to decide if you want to do that with me. So I was like, okay, I don't really know how to process all of this. And I went back to work a couple of days later, and it wasn't like I started praying. It wasn't like I started reading the Bible. But I noticed that over the course of the next month or so, things started to radically change in my life. The things that, the weights and the sins that I had entangled me good and properly, it was like he was taking like a saber to it and just like hacking them off. And these things that I'd just been running after, it just didn't have that hold on me anymore. It was fascinating because I remember like as soon as I went back to work, people said to me things like, Tim, what did you get up to at the weekend? Because like, you look completely different. And I realised that I had this new lightness and this new sort of light that was coming out of me. And I didn't really understand it. But after a month, Jesus had changed my life so much that I was just like, all right, I'm in. I want you. Because I've had like the tiniest taste of what it's like to have a relationship with you and to know your love and to know your acceptance and to know your forgiveness. And I just want all of you because you're amazing and you're so much better than anything I've ever experienced before. And so I got baptized. And, you know, it's not that everything immediately became better and the work of God, that refining process, it's a lifetime work. But actually, my whole understanding of what it meant to be a Christian had completely been turned on its head. And I'd always thought it had been about sort of moral conformance and going to church and going reading the Bible and doing prayers and all these other things. But I'd missed, completely missed, what was at the heart of all of that. And that is a relationship with Jesus. And through that process, over the course of the next year, God was just preparing me and changing my heart and changing a few things in my life. And through that, he basically called me to come back to Manchester and to do to work with the church up there and to train. Now, I wasn't expecting to go into church leadership, but this is where I now find myself. But so I took that step of faith and I moved back to Manchester about a year later. And I was involved with a church up there that was doing a lot of outreach during Freshers Week. And we went out every night from 10 till 2 in the morning, giving out sweets and bottles of water and talking to students about Jesus and praying with them and helping them get connected. And I remember at the end of the week, I had a conversation with a girl and I explained the gospel to her using this really simple technique, which I'm going to show you guys later. And at the end of it, she just said, "I want Jesus. I want Jesus to come into my life." And I was just blown away by this. And I was going home that night and I was absolutely exhausted. But I was just knew, it was like that moment the light bulb went on and I was like, this is what it's all about. I was like, this is what I've been made for. And you see, it was like, we can have this idea that the church and Christian faith is about doing a fit of these obligations and doing these certain things. But actually, it's like, no, God has got so much more for us. God's got such a bigger vision of what it means to know him and love him than that. And it completely, it just got a hold of me. And I wonder if, I think, you know, for all of us, it's like, what is it, when we're running, talking about running the race, what is it that we're really running after? Because I really believe that God is calling us all to be, you know, his church that lives by faith and not by sight, a church that is bold and courageous, a church that steps out and takes ground and helps people to find him, building his kingdom here, now, one person at a time, one person at a time, one person at a time. And I feel like that is worth something. That is something really worth fighting for. That is something worth persevering for. That's something worth going after. And so he says to us in this verse in Hebrews 12, it says, I urge you to run this race with perseverance. Move forward. Take ground. Keep going. Keep going. And I just want to pull out a few different things that I've kind of have found really helpful in growing in this idea of being on this race. And the first is this, is that we have this race, but we each have our own race. It's the race marked out for you, and for you, and for you. And every single race is different. It's going to look different for every single person. Tim said earlier, he mentioned this verse in Ephesians 2, that says, we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which he has prepared in advance for us to do. That, like, actually you're calling, so we're saved. And in Timothy it says, you're saved and called for a purpose by grace. And it's actually, you're saved, but you're also called to walk in the purposes that God has got for you, towards what he is doing, wants to do through you and in you. And I think it's so easy to become discouraged in the race. It's so easy to lose that sense of purpose in what you're doing when you look at other people in their race and you see they seem to have these better gifts. They've got better talents. They're more funny. They're a better communicator. Or they've got more friends, or they've led more people to Jesus, or they've got better grades, or more Instagram likes, or whatever it is. But we compare ourselves to these other people, and we say, well, they're like that, and God's using them, but God can't use me. Put that all to one side. He said, no, I've created you. You're fearfully and wonderfully made. He knows everything about you. He knows all of your ways. And he loves you. And he says, there's a plan and a purpose for your life. My workmanship is not shoddy. You're not less good than anybody else. You're perfect in his sight. You're immeasurable value, so much so that he died for you so that he could have you back. And so it doesn't stop at salvation. It's like, that's like the front door to the house. You get saved, but there's so much more that he's calling you into. It's like you don't go to someone's house and sit on the front door and drink tea and eat biscuits. No, he's calling, that's like the entry point into the life that God has called you to have. Yeah? You with me? Great. So according to his purpose, Romans 8, there's purpose in your calling. And I wonder what it is. What is it that gets you out of bed in the morning? What is it that gets that passion going out for you? But I love that God's realistic, but it's not going to be easy. And so, like, if you're finding it a bit of a struggle, then don't beat yourself up, because he says you need to persevere. Perseverance is going, even though everything looks like it's a waste of time and there's no fruit and it's not worth it. And actually, you're going to have those moments where actually no one understands you, no one understands where you're coming from. And at uni, when like you're the only Christian in your corridor or in your flat, and everyone's like, that's really good for you, but whatever. You know, you're going to have those moments. Even Moses had that, because when he went to Pharaoh was like, who is the Lord? Yeah, we're all going to have those moments. But, you know, it's that knowing that there's purpose in what God is calling us to. You know, for me, this really came out when, about 2 months after I became Christian, God really started speaking to me about how much I was drinking. Now, I wasn't an alcoholic, I wasn't drinking every night, but when I used to go out, I used to drink far too much. And it was a real barrier, it was a real issue, because it meant that I just kept stumbling into the same old habits, same old ways of thinking. And he was just like, I remember I was doing the Bible in 1 year thing, and every day it was like, these verses started coming up, like, I think it started with Samson and John on the same day, set apart, no drinking for the purposes that God has got for them. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then the next day it was like, wine is a brawler, or whatever it is, and there's all these different verses about just the drinking, just being just a really destructive thing. And I was just like, no, and then, anyway. I knew it was him, because that weekend coming up, it was my best friend Stag Do, who I was living with. I was like, it's going to be so difficult to be obedient in this time. But I know that because it's difficult, I know that it is God actually that is calling me. And I remember on about the Tuesday before this Stag Do, I was on the tube in London, and I was walking between two of the platforms. And there was this tunnel, and I was walking through a tunnel. I could just feel that same sort of presence of God, and I was like, oh my goodness, I think God's about to speak to me. And he did. And it was just like this little whisper. And he just said, look, if you don't let go of this, you'll never know the plan and the purpose that I've got for your life. And I was just like, oh, cut me to the core. And I was like, all right. And I knew it was going to be tough. And even though I lived with this guy that was going on this Stag Do, I didn't say anything to him. And it was, I had this reputation of being like the party guy. I was the guy that would get the Jaeger bombs in. I was the guy that would buy the Prosecco. I was that guy. I was earning good money, so I could afford to do it. And I like being the centre of attention. I'm a bird. What can I say? But I did. I love being the centre of attention. And so I would just do anything to kind of get that. Kudos. And so all that week, I was come home and I was like, God, I'm not going to drink this weekend. I'm going to take this step of faith. But I didn't have the balls to say anything. And I remember it wasn't until the Friday night that we got to the Norfolk Broads. And we had this whole weekend plan. It was like 26 lads, 4 boats, 4 days. And I was just like totally dreading it. And it wasn't until I was standing in Tesco's with my friend that I spent 4 hours in the car with, in the beer aisle, looking at the offers, that he said, well, what do you want to drink this weekend, Tim? And I was like, Tom, I'm not going to drink this weekend. I've given up drinking. And he was like, what? He was just like, I can't even understand what you're telling me right now. Just go away or whatever it was. And so I sort of like, a bit sheepish. And then the whole weekend, all the guys were like just ripping in. And I was just like, what is the point of all of this? It's just like horrible. They're just taking the mick. And they were like, oh, I remember even the bride's dad, there was this jukebox in this pub. And at one point he said, go and put some tunes on. And then I was like, oh, what do you want? He goes, oh, it's no good. You're only going to put hymns on or something. And I was just like, oh, this sucks. But at the end of the weekend, I was just like, "What God? What's the whole point of all of this? Why?" And I was just sitting in the pub on the last night, and there was one lad who he was so ruined from just pushing it too far that he wasn't drinking. He was feeling really sick, and he just turned to me and he just said, "Why didn't you drink this weekend? Why aren't you drinking?" And I had the opportunity to sit with him and just talk him through what Jesus has done in my life, what He had called us to. and that what he was offering to my friend through what he did for us on the cross. And he didn't drop to his knees and ask Jesus to come into his life, but as I was walking back to bed that night, I had this leap in my step. I just felt this enormous gift of joy. I felt like God saying, look, I've asked you to do this, but you're going to use you to help people find me. And you know, in those moments where actually we do make decisions that are countercultural, that go against what everyone else is doing, that they are going to be tough, they are going to be hard, but I want you to know that in those moments where you have to make a decision, are you going to keep going? Are you going to persevere? That God has a plan and a purpose in that, that he will use you to help other people find him. Not just through the words that you use, but also through the life that you live that reflects his holiness, that reflects his love. And that's such a powerful thing, and it's just been an enormous encouragement to me. And the second thing, I guess, I want to sort of share is that, you know, I love it that this time of year, what we're celebrating is God drawing near to us in a way that we can see, with Jesus coming and being one of us. Matthew 2, it says that he is Emmanuel, God with us. And I think this is a massive game changer for us, because actually I think that if we think that in every situation that we're in every single day, that God is with us. He said yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So that's like forever, the same, unchanging. So if he's with us then, he's with us now. And I think if we realise that actually God is with us in every situation, and we see it like that, that actually that changes everything. He is with us. He's the God of the impossible, a God that works all things for our good, that he loves you, that he's for you, and nothing can stand against you if you're walking in the purpose that he has got. And I think, again, we can become discouraged if we think that God isn't any of those things that he promises that he is. And we can think that he's far off. But yet, when we know that he's with us, and we know that his promises are always yes in Christ over our lives, and the things that he says to us cannot be changed, because it's he who made the promise. That is just an amazing thing. Over the summer, we were praying about what did it look like for us to be a church? What did it look like for us to serve the students that are near us? And we really felt God say, he gave us the scripture from Joshua 1, that it says, that I'll give you the land that I've promised your ancestors. And the whole reason the church had been established was to reach students for the love of Jesus and reach out for them. So we're saying, oh God, what does it look like for us to inherit this land? What does it look like for us to be involved in the university? And around that sort of time, a friend came to me and said, we've got these buses that we do youth work with called Needham Bus. And it's great, it has climbing walls, PlayStations, and all of these things. And we just think it'd be a really good idea to use it for reaching freshers. So you can get them on the bus, they can play some games and stuff, and then we can have conversations and chat with them about Jesus. And I was thinking, this is nuts. We've never been able to do anything like this before. There's no way the university would let us be so bold on campus. And because they'd always made us do stuff out on the street. But I was like, but the timing feels about right, so we're just going to go for it. So we lined up meetings with the university, and we chatted to them, and we prayed about it loads. And it's just like, one by one, the doors opened, and eventually we got to the point about 2 months before September, so it was like end of July, and we had it all lined up to go. 2 months later, we hadn't heard anything. And so we were thinking, we've got all these artists lined up, we had these bands coming, had these evangelists coming to speak, and all these different things. And it was like, it wasn't until the Friday before we were due to be there on the Monday that I just sort of panicked a little bit, and I wrote an email to the most senior person that I knew and just said, what is going on? And I didn't hear anything the whole weekend, and I was like, God, are you even in this? Have I just made this all up? Was this just like a whole pride thing? Was this like me just showing off and trying to make a big impact and to take over leadership of this church? And I was like tearing my hair out, and the whole weekend, nothing. Until Sunday night, I check my phone and I see that I had an email that had been sent on a Saturday morning saying, we can't do it, it's impossible, because we need to see the bus first. And I was like, oh, you've got to be joking, this is going to be like the most embarrassing thing ever. And I was like, I'm so sure you promised this. And I felt in that moment, I was so discouraged. And I was just like, what was the point of all of this? And I emailed them back and just a sort of desperate thing and said, look, what if we come first thing in the morning? Can we do it? I was just thinking, there's no way, because they need to sign off all the health and safety, all this paperwork. And I went to the pub that night, and I sat down with one of my friends after the church service, and I thought, I really need to talk to you. And we started chatting it through and praying it through. And I just said, look, I'm just not going to do it. We can't do it. And we'll just leave it there. And then when I got home that night, I looked at my phone and I had an email, and it was just saying, "Yeah, that's fine. We can do it. We can go ahead." And I was just like, "What? What?" And I think there's a key in there, is that actually we can't do what God calls us to do without Him. We can't be the people that God calls us to be without Him. And so, like, I love what Tim was saying earlier about how it's that conversation, that relationship with God, and just continually giving all of the things that we feel that are on our heart. It's not carrying ourselves, but about giving it to Him. And that really just changes everything. And the third thing I want to say is this. I feel like I'm repeating what Tim was saying this morning about praying, reading the Bible, and doing it with friends. But actually, when I think about perseverance, I pretty much think that that is it. It doesn't change. It doesn't really change. And so the third thing I want to say is this. It's the race marked out for us. We do it together. It might look different for every single person, but it's for us. We don't do it together. It's not a lone thing. In Hebrews 3:13 it says, encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. I think it's really interesting to see sin as being deceitful. Sin is a liar. First of all, it makes you believe something about God that isn't true. And actually, it makes you believe that either He's not good, or that He won't give you everything you need, or that you find purpose and identity somewhere else. And so you turn to other things to find them. And then when you do, and when you mess up, you get these thoughts that come to you that say, you're no good, this is it, it's all over now, you'll never be any good to anybody, you know, you'll never have a relationship, you'll never be used by God, you'll never be anything good. And it's in those times that you kind of believe all of those lies, and you kind of can sunk down and kind of feel like, oh yeah, a bit like Eeyore, just sort of like, whoa. And just have this sort of, just feel deadened and heavy by all of these accusations. But it's not true, because Jesus says, there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. My mercies are new every day. So Jesus is shouting at you, come on, this crowd of, and the crowd of witnesses, like, get up, pick yourself up. I love you. You are my son. You are my child. You are my daughter. I have plans and purposes for you. Nothing can stand against you. And you need people around you in those moments to be that person who's going to grab you and be like, no. And if you can't hear the voice of God for yourself as you're reading and as you're singing, you need to have friends around you. They're going to be that voice of encouragement. It's like, I was watching Lord of the Rings last weekend. I still love it. Best films ever. And I have also read the books, but I love the films. And it's that moment in the second film when Frodo and Sam are with Gollum and they're walking through, I can't remember the name of the, sort of the bog. There's all this mist and there's like this big bog. And they're walking through and there's these sort of big ponds of water around. And in this water, there's all these sort of like weird dead body things. And you see Frodo kind of gets pulled away from the main group. Gollum's like, stay together! And he's got separated. And he sort of starts looking in the water, gets pulled away from the path. And he starts looking in. And then this weird thing, its eyes open, and he sort of goes, and falls in. And he falls into it. But then, after a couple of seconds, you see Sam come over and be like, no! And grabs him and pulls him out. And that is what you need. You need to walk together. And there will be times when you're by yourself and God will give you the grace for it. I believe that. But make sure that you've got people that are around you. And if you don't, be that person to somebody else. Be that person to somebody else. Because I tell you what, I can't do this without those guys around me. I think being conscious of time, the last thing I really want to say is this. Is that actually, when we, in those moments, of whether it's going really well or it's not, actually making that decision every day to believe the promises that God's got for you, to believe who you are in Christ, that's what's going to get you through. And actually, I'm kind of going to bring this right back around to where I want to finish. Paul says to Timothy to be prepared in and out of season. Always be ready and be prepared in and out of season to share Jesus with people. And actually, I think that is the final thing I want to say about perseverance. It's just keep going. Just keep going. Pick yourself up. Keep going.